I want to take you to the Imperial Valley of California. It's early December. WBEZ reporter Dan Mihalopoulos and producer Noah Jennings are hiking along the U.S.-Mexico border.
So we're in the shadow of the mountain and the shadow of the wall.
It was this border where Commander-at-Large Gregory Bovino started his career with the Border Patrol.
So it looks like some people have crossed here recently.
Yeah, interesting.
They're walking with Edie Harmon, an environmentalist in California. She lives in the desert, right on the Mexico border.
If you want to go in the area with the big cactus that I walked with Bovino.
She once did a hike nearby with Bovino. She was trying to show him the environmental impact his agency was having.
When you were talking with him, what was his tone? How was he receptive?
My guess. But he didn't stay for the peanut butter and strawberry jam sandwiches I made. He left to go back.
But not before insisting on one last thing, that they pose for a photograph.
Now, he wanted his picture taken with me and with all the guys that were there.
Bovino is very fond of photo ops. Unlike other agents, he never puts on a mask. And for 2 months this fall, and then again in December, Chicago served as his backdrop. During that time, his team produced slick Hollywood-style videos, some portraying Bovino as a hero who's come to save the city from dangerous immigrants. He talks often on TV and podcast appearances about who the good guys are and who the bad guys are.
That is why the U.S. Border Patrol, the Mean Green Team, is in those communities. It's to take out those bad people and bad things and to disrupt what was allowed to come into our country.
Whatever city we're in, wherever we're at, whether it's Charlotte, Chicago, Los Angeles, or anywhere else, the illegal aliens and bad guys are going to jail and they're going to be deported.
And while he was in Chicago, he and his team went after those, quote, bad guys. Federal agents arrested thousands and shot two people. They dragged a daycare teacher out of work in front of crying children and hit a pastor in the head with a pepper ball. They used force, things like tear gas, chokeholds, and tackles in at least 140 separate incidents. Bovino says the tear gas, the stun grenades, the arrests are all necessary to keep the homeland safe.
And I didn't deploy one canister of gas. I deployed two. If I had had the ability to deploy 50, I would have.
And he's captured it all, from Chicago to Charlotte, on his social media feeds. Yet if you try to Google even the most basic information about Bovino's life, it's nearly impossible to find anything about him personally, his family, or the experiences that led him to become the kind of Border Patrol leader he is today. So we went digging. In North Carolina, where Bovino grew up.
I bet you he's in his mind, whatever it is, he's just following orders.
And in the mountainous desert of California, where Bovino honed his tactics and his flair for the camera.
He's like the Liberace of the Border Patrol.
Bovino wouldn't talk to us for this story.
Mr. Bovino, can I ask you a couple questions?
Not today.
Not today.
Back up. Back up.
But he did appear on a podcast hosted by an old buddy from the Border Patrol.
It's my personal responsibility to make the nation a safer place, because what happens on the border doesn't necessarily and oftentimes does not stay on the border. It's headed somewhere else.
I'm Patrick Smith. This is Becoming Bovino, a special production from WBEZ Chicago in partnership with the Chicago Sun-Times. Coming up, I'll sit down with WBEZ investigative reporter Dan Mihalopoulos.
Somebody goes from relative obscurity to sudden prominence, casually tossing tear gas into neighborhoods. Well, you want to know who that is. You want to find out everything you can about him.
And Sun-Times investigative reporter Lauren Fitzpatrick.
It was time to do this kind of deep dive into who was this guy. And for all of his love of the camera and all of his social media profiles, he hasn't really said a whole lot about himself and the people who know him best.
Lauren, Dan, so there aren't a lot of public records online for Gregory Bovino, but you are both experts at digging into people's backgrounds. What were some of the first things you were able to learn about him before you headed out to North Carolina and California?
The kinds of usual information we would expect to see about him just as a person, where he's from, places he lives, what he's into, just were not there. We did quickly figure out, though, that he really liked attention. And we had figured out that he comes from Italian immigrants.
You know, I looked at, what is this guy? That's the Chicago question. What are you? And he is an Italian on the Bovino side from his great-grandfather, who was, you know, a lot like the immigrants that he's going after here in Chicago, frankly, working class, coal miner, and actually was going back and forth from Italy until all of a sudden there are some restrictions being put on immigrants from Italy and other such countries because they're seen as undesirable, because they're seen as bringing crime and poverty to the cities of America. And just days after that law is passed, Michele Bovino indicates his intention to become an American citizen. And within a couple years, we see the chain migration of his wife and his kids, including Greg Bovino's grandfather.
Yeah, and what's extra remarkable about the part of Italy that they come from is that it was deep in the South, incredibly poor, lacking opportunity, a place they very much wanted to get themselves out of. Do you not hear the parallels to some of the migrants who have come to Chicago?
Okay, so his father's side of the family is originally from Italy, but his mom's goes back generations in North Carolina. Lauren, that's where you went. Tell us about where Bovino's from.
Bovino comes from a little tiny town called Blowing Rock, and it's up in the Blue Ridge Mountains in the northwest corner of the state, like the very edge. It's stunningly beautiful. There are mountains, so many trees. People go there for the nature. They hike, they fish, they hunt. The county is also really known for Christmas tree farming and Christmas tree production. And it took us a minute to realize that what we were looking at on the mountains were not just trees like planted haphazardly. They were being grown very specifically. And then there's also tons of construction. I called up the mayor, Charlie Sellers, and he told me they really rely on immigrant labor.
They're a vital part, you know, of our economy. I don't really follow the ICE thing or the Border Patrol, but I am always in favor of people being treated fairly, no matter who you are.
Well, that's
so you guys are trying to get information on Greg, I just went like Bovino.
Yes, we are.
I'll have to be very honest with you. I didn't know him. I've learned more about him in the last few weeks or month or two than I ever knew.
Okay, so the mayor didn't really know him, but you went looking for others who did. What did people you met have to say about Gregory Bovino?
Oh man, it was hard to find people who would talk about Gregory Bovino. We tried. We did all the usual reporter things. We called, we went through Facebook and sent messages. We texted, we emailed. Our team went to visit his high school, and here's why. I love a high school yearbook for trying to put together the life of someone who doesn't necessarily want to cooperate with fleshing out their life, right? You can learn a lot about what they were involved in, and you can pinpoint dates and ages, and then if you can find like clubs or student council, you can find friends who knew them too. So I set up an appointment with the high school to go look at the yearbook, his senior yearbook from 1988. And, you know, they let us in.
We're in the sports section. Hey, there we go. This is what yearbooks do. Okay, row one. Here he is on the end in a singlet.
Under a sign that says, pain is temporary, pride is forever.
Pride is forever.
But then, Patrick, I think they kicked us out. It was bizarre.
Yeah, we need to get back to business as usual.
Yeah, you got it.
Is it possible to get two pages scanned?
We will not be able to scan those, so sorry.
Even under the State Public Records Act,
we won't be able to do that.
You want to put in another public records request? We can maybe work on that at another time.
I think that's a first. I've been kicked out of a lot of places for a lot of reasons, but reporting, of course. I've never been ejected from a public building before looking at public records. And I guess what was lucky for us is just that the area was relatively small. I mean, there was Bovino's actual hometown and then this college town next door called Boone, which is the home of Appalachian State University. And one of the gems we found, just absolute gem, was his old wrestling coach, Lee Strew.
Could it be that one?
Okay. Oh. We went to knock on his door. No one is home, but he's got a Ring doorbell and sees that we are at his house. So as we are leaving the mountain very slowly, because I'm scared to drive on these roads, he pulls us over.
and says, I think you're looking for me. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Did you come by our house?
If you are Coach Stroop, then yes, I did. And long story short, he and his wife chit-chat and say, we're on our way back into town. We saw you stop by. Would you like to join us for dinner at this Italian spot we like to go to?
This would be in town.
Yes. Okay.
At Bella's. It's an Italian place.
Okay, Lauren, this feels like progress. You've gone from being kicked out to now you're being invited to dinner. So what did the coach have to say about Gregory Bovino?
So the coach had this very particular recollection of him. And he tells us that Bovino is hardly the biggest guy on the wrestling team, right? Maybe as tall as the coach himself, who's about 5'9". And he was hardly the best wrestler on the team either. And by senior year, the wrestling team is just unusually bad.
Okay. Greg was an average wrestler. Okay. But he enjoyed his coaches, and we had a real connection with him.
The thing you remember about Greg is that he really listened. He talked with the coaches. He took what they said seriously. He trained really hard. He was, you know, respectful with all of his teammates. So by senior year, they pick him not as the best wrestler, but as the most improved wrestler.
So that was quite an honor, you know, to get that.
Oh, and the coach was like, I'm so sorry. I can't really remember a whole lot of things. Like, this is 40 years ago. I'm now a 76-year-old man. A lot of life have happened. However, I will tell you one more thing I remember about Greg Bovino.
Now, this is odd. He liked snakes. I remember him telling me about that. So he knew exactly where to find a snake.
And he knew where the poisonous ones were, and he could identify all different kinds of them. And the coach goes,
I said, Greg, we don't have many poisonous snakes up here in the mountains. He says, well, I know where there are poisonous snakes.
And where you go look for them is where they like to take cover. The other big thing he remembered about Greg Bovino is that Greg was in a single-parent household. He said his mom was a really sweet lady, but he'd never met Greg's dad.
Never.
Never.
I remember Greg being more of a single-parent family because I would write the names of their parents. And
that would track because by the time Greg Bovino gets to high school, his parents are divorced and the family's kind of fallen apart.
Why?
Well, a few years before Bovino's mom filed for divorce, his dad caused a really terrible car crash because he was drunk. Killed a woman, a 26-year-old, really injured the woman's husband. It was a little bit after midnight in May 1981. Newspaper accounts at the time described the victim's car as just bowled over by the impact. It was a DUI. Bovino's dad went to prison.
I find that really interesting because drunk driving has really factored into some of the stated reasons behind the deportation campaign, particularly Operation Midway Blitz here in Chicago, right?
Yeah, I mean, DUIs are things he talks about all the time, the crimes he seems to highlight the most. When Biden was president, Bovino was forced to take down a tweet about an undocumented immigrant who was driving drunk. And now that he's one of Trump's top guys, he's constantly tweeting about, you know, he's trying to protect American citizens from foreigners who may not be here legally. And then they get drunk, they get behind the wheel, they kill those U.S. citizens. The Trump administration, in fact, launched this, quote, Operation Midway Blitz in honor of a 20-year-old DUI victim.
Okay, back to your dinner with Coach Stroop. Did you ask him about Bovino and the Border Patrol?
He said he told a story of bumping into Bovino a few years earlier. So Bovino is not yet the guy we know, but he's well on his way.
He told me that he was working with the Border Patrol in Arizona and Mexico. And I asked him, I said, that was a real surprise.
And the coach is like, I thought law enforcement would be the absolute last place that this guy would end up. And we're like, okay, tell us more. He said, you know, he was just so pleasant. He was so funny. He just didn't strike us as having the kind of personality that would attract him to law enforcement.
So that was a surprise. And he said he enjoyed it. So that was the last time I am communicating with Greg, you know.
Coach Stroop is surprised that Gregory Bovino ends up in the Border Patrol. In your digging, what do you think? Why does he end up with the Border Patrol?
Greg Bovino would say, because he's told the story a couple times, that his inspiration comes from a movie that he saw. It came out in 1982. This is right around the time his dad is in prison, FYI. And this movie called The Border comes out. It is produced by a very distant cousin of his mom's, a guy they all call Uncle Neil. And the way Bovino explains it is that he was like sort of mortified that they were the bad guys. Why in the world would they be the bad guys? They're supposed to be like the good guys.
Within every man, there is a border.
I need the riot gun.
Once he crosses it, there's no going back. The border. It divided the land. It divided the man.
The way he spells it out on a podcast with a friend who's also in the Border Patrol is he wants to make sure the Border Patrol are all good guys again.
We all know what that movie was about, so I thought maybe I'd get a little bit on the other side and take it back the other way.
So Bovino is a kid when he has that thought, but he doesn't let it go. He goes to college, earns a master's degree, does a short stint with the Boone Police Department, and then in 1996, he joins the Border Patrol. He's 26, and he's in California in a town called El Centro.
It's after dark by the time we got here from San Diego, traveled all day from Chicago.
Dan, you went to El Centro. You were there to learn more about Bovino as a Border Patrol leader and about the agency itself. What was the Border Patrol like when Bovino joined up?
It's a big law enforcement agency with a lot of the same problems that other law enforcement agencies are accused of having, using excessive force, of having corruption, of not being accountable.
Border Patrol is the least trained, the most aggressive were the thugs. In my day, they called us the butthole of the federal service.
I spoke with someone that joined around the same time as a former agent named Jen Budd. She worked in the San Diego sector, so El Centro's a little bit east of there.
The Border Patrol's like a cult, and we say we bleed green, and we always protect each other.
She found that it's really a pretty toxic culture where they are not too picky about who they take, that they don't really vet them properly, and they end up having agents with a lot of problems, and they back them up instead of holding them accountable or drumming them out.
To her, she finds, you know, you say a toxic culture. How did she think that affected the way they treated the migrants or the people that they were going after specifically?
So she said they treat the migrants extremely poorly, and they were taught to track them and really hunt them.
We hunt them like animals. We track them as if they're animals. We're trained to track them, how to work them into certain areas, to the worst areas where they suffer the most, which was the entire purpose of deterrence policies that started in the 90s, was to make them suffer or die so that they would send messages back and say, don't come, it's not worth it.
She said the term that they use for the migrants is tonks.
And that's the sound our flashlight makes when we hit them in the head.
How does she think that culture affects Bovino as a leader and the kind of enforcement operations we're seeing now?
Well, Bovino is very proud of what he does. He says that he loves this agency, that he thinks it's the greatest agency in law enforcement, and that that's his legacy. So he's a company guy. You know, at the same time, she has noticed before he came to wide prominence that Bovino was a little different, though, from a lot of guys in this agency, and it is mostly guys. She thought that Bovino was itching to have attention drawn to himself, and it was difficult to do that in such a remote place, in such a remote part of a long and dusty border.
So she would say he is of this Border Patrol culture, he was shaped by it, but he was also looking to stand out from it. How so?
One time, a couple years back, when he was in charge in El Centro, he jumped into an irrigation canal and swam across it and invited cameras. It was a press stunt, really.
You know, I'll tell you, the current is what really got me. I think that, too, would be something that would be a factor in the dangerousness of the canal.
And we saw similar attention-grabbing attempts here in Chicago. He was on a boat in the Chicago River.
Operation Midway Blitz has extended to the waters in Chicago. Last night, the U.S. Border Patrol posted pictures of armed federal agents aboard boats on the Chicago River.
Showed up on the Magnificent Mile in full battle gear. What really strikes me whenever I've seen him out there is there's a big contrast between how he's sort of reveling in this role, being the center of attention, but at the same time, a few feet away, people are having their lives destroyed.
Understanding Bovino's time in El Centro is critical to understanding Bovino. His career started in El Centro, then he rose to the Border Patrol ranks and returned to El Centro as chief in 2020. So this is obviously a very, maybe the most important place in Bovino's career. What's the community there like, and what's their relationship with the Border Patrol?
El Centro is a very agricultural area where you have a lot of farm workers from both sides of the border. The community is heavily Hispanic, almost completely bilingual, and you have people that are picking 90% of the vegetables that we eat in the rest of the country at this time of year. We went to a farm workers' appreciation breakfast that they've been doing for decades, and it started at 1 a.m., and when we got there at 2 a.m., there were lines around the block.
I partied pretty late in Mexico, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody like a dance party before going to work at like...
Well, why are they eating breakfast? Why are they eating tamales at this time? Because they're bussed out to the fields at a very early hour of the day, before dawn often, to start picking those crops. And the people we talked to at that breakfast said, you know, hey, it's the migrants who do the hard work that other people don't want to do.
Los mexicanos somos lo que hacemos ese trabajo.
It's Mexicans that basically are doing this for low pay. People like Sandra Soto, who's worked for 30 years picking crops there.
She
makes $16.50 an hour. Her annual raise might be 25 cents an hour. And she was actually about to hop into a bus and go to a field that was really close to where Greg Bovino lives, close to his house.
You went to Bovino's house. You got turned away by armed guards. But what about other people you spoke to? Like the woman Edie at the very top of the show, we heard you hiking with her. What does she think about Bovino?
She's not a fan, you know. She doesn't have anything against the Border Patrol in general. She's had largely good relationships with many of the agents. And she's heartbroken to see some of these same agents who've been kind to her personally behaving the ways that we've seen on these videos.
But I never saw the kind of brutality that I'm seeing in video footage of Border Patrol agents and ICE, especially in Chicago. I mean, it's... And then to have Bovino justify it, what he's asking people to do, it's heartbreaking.
How would you sum up how most of the people in that region feel about the Border Patrol?
Well, it's a mixed bag. A lot of them are Border Patrol. There's 900 agents that live in a fairly small community. There's families that are mixed status in terms of immigration. It's mostly Hispanic, but you have a lot of Hispanic agents also. And it's a job, you know, and it is a job that is a decent job in an area with not a lot of opportunities. I mean, a lot of people view them as a deeply corrupt and cruel and violent agency. You know, we talk to people in San Diego and in the Imperial Valley who've tracked the activities of Border Patrol in that part of the frontier. And one of them was Monica Langarica, a senior attorney at UCLA. She's followed some of these cases in the El Centro sector in the last 5 years since Bovino was put in charge there.
I don't want to sort of single out El Centro as being, you know, like completely unique. But certainly the El Centro sector is known for these really cruel, you know, deterrence type of practices that have come to harm many people that I have served.
We learned from Monica Langarica and from others about a particularly brutal case of a Salvadoran migrant woman named Lucy. I think she was all of 4'9".
So Lucy crossed the border and ended up within the El Centro sector. She was with her 10-year-old daughter, and she has this encounter with the Border Patrol agent, an armed agent, who beats her brutally, and she describes this beating as both like horrific physically and also extremely traumatic because it happens in front of her 10-year-old daughter.
You know, you have to remember this is all happening while Bovino is in charge of the El Centro sector of the Border Patrol. And while Lucy was in detention, she gets hit with federal charges of assaulting the Border Patrol agent, only for those charges to get dropped later. It's a story very, very similar to what we've seen with protesters here in Chicago since Bovino was in town, where they're, you know, usually when you get hit with federal charges, it's pretty certain they're going to stick. And a lot of these cases that are being brought against protesters here in Chicago are falling apart. And we're seeing it again and again, which is extremely, extremely rare in the federal court system.
Why does Monica think these charges were brought in the first place?
Well, there are a lot of people, that including Monica and Jen Budd, the former agent we talked to, who think that it's a pattern and practice of the department to just say, hey, someone's going to accuse us of something, we're going to accuse them back.
I think it was a prosecution that sought to silence her, you know, stop her from speaking out about the assault that she experienced, and that sought to justify this cruel practice of separating her for 5 months from her 10-year-old daughter. I don't think it was legally justified by the facts.
That's pattern and practice in the Border Patrol down here.
The pattern and practice is what?
Is to make false accusations against the people you just beat up. Whether it's using hitting a car with your vehicle, that is a use of force, as well as hitting, as well as pepper balls, as well as shooting. Anytime they engage in use of force, they're going to turn around and say, well, we had to do it because you forced us to. So they just get away with lying about it down here because it happens in the middle of nowhere. And they're used to just doing that. And then they just drop the charges if they get called on it.
So under Bovino's watch, there's this history of agents abusing immigrants. But you also heard from Jen Budd that there was a culture of abusive behavior inside the agency itself.
So the motto is honor first. The men do not say honor first. They say on her first.
On her first, she says, is a reference to this endemic sexual abuse culture within the department, where they view the women differently than the vast majority who are men. She points to all the different cases of sexual crimes against different agents. She told us she had been raped when she joined the Border Patrol, like many other female recruits, and that she was pressured to not complain about it.
I joined the Border Patrol after college in June of 1995. Like most women in the Border Patrol, my hazing was a sexual assault, and you're required to survive that and keep your mouth shut. That's how you keep your job.
Jen Budd tells us that she just didn't last very long there, for not only because of the culture that was there, but there was a specific incident which she described as she came across some evidence of corruption and was threatened to stay quiet. And so she was scared for her own well-being, and she said, I got to get out of here.
And I said, I can't stay. They're going to kill me. And that, you know, after I put, and then I put in my resignation. The Border Patrol will do whatever you order them to do, whether it's legal or not. They don't care, because they know that they have the cover-up teams and they have the people that will support them and get them out of trouble.
So let's fast forward to January 2025. Bovino is still in El Centro. President Donald Trump is about to take office. And Bovino leads a raid in a place called Kern County.
Sightings of Border Patrol activities is being reported all over Kern County.
This is in the middle of California, nowhere near the border.
If they looked Hispanic or like they worked in the fields or, you know, they looked a little dirty, they would ask for their papers.
Those sources said Border Patrol agent Gregory Bovino, quote, went rogue with the January raids, adding that.
And that was a raid that he did where we saw a lot of the things we would see later in Chicago and other cities, the raids at Home Depots, the sort of indiscriminate activity. We have Greg Bovino launch this raid far away from the border. They hadn't really seen much like it before.
I think he showed himself. That was his audition, because he wasn't asked to do that. It wasn't planned. It was his decision to do that. And he did it. He was showing initiative, and he got Trump's attention. And that's how he got roped into this.
Okay, those are Jen Budd's insights into Border Patrol and Bovino. I want to hear from the man himself. Here's a little bit of Bovino on his friend's podcast.
I would say that Border Patrol's been my life's work, and I will say that, and I'll say that with pride, and it will be the defining factor in who I am and what I've done and what I will do.
He says this is his life's work. Based on your reporting, is Gregory Bovino a true believer in this deportation campaign, or has he been auditioning for this higher profile role?
I think that we have seen different examples of Bovino trying to break out of his shell, to break out of his station in life, but never really had the chance until he's met the moment with this administration. I think a lot of people would say that he was itching to go away from the border. Jen Budd even told us, she's said for years that she thinks that the Border Patrol has ambitions beyond Bovino to become a national police force. And I mean, I think they're still focused exclusively on immigration, but is Bovino not only the sort of precursor for bringing the Border Patrol to other parts of the country, but maybe some sort of prototype for going and creating a much more robust national police?
Bovino returned to Chicago in December, and sources say an even larger number of Border Patrol agents than we saw during Operation Midway Blitz could be here in the spring. Now that you know more about Bovino, Lauren, what are you on the lookout for?
I think what became clear from all the reporting that we've done in this very tight time frame on Greg Bovino is that he was sent here, but he wasn't just sent here. He believes that everywhere in the country is where he should be with his Border Patrol, trying to keep America, quote unquote, safe from immigrants. Everywhere. Chicago is where he belongs. We're far from the border. He's supposed to be here. Wherever there's a need, that is where he and his crew and their cameras should go.
Do you feel like after all of this reporting, you understand Bovino better?
We don't know how he is in person or how he is in private, but clearly the image that he's tried to hone and that he's doubling down on and trying to expand on with every action that he takes here and in other cities is reflective of, I think, a very, very almost simple viewpoint that there's people that do things the wrong way and he's a good guy and he's going to catch some of them. Or many of them as he can.
In some ways, after all this reporting, I understand him less because of what we learned about his own immigration history and what happened to get his family here from this poor part of Italy that they were trying to escape to be here. And then considering how his dad is one of these DUI perpetrators who killed a woman, I almost understand his motivation less because if he were to look back at his own family and where he comes from versus what it is that he's doing in the streets of Chicago lately again, in a lot of ways, to me, it doesn't make any sense.
This episode was produced by Marie Mendoza with help from Noah Jennings. It was edited by Alexander Solomon. Special thanks to Frank Main, Derek John, and Paul Saltzman. Audio engineering by Haley Bloomquist, with additional help from Deshaun Smith, Maria Lopez, and Ethan Schwab. You can read more of our investigation of Gregory Bovino at wbez.org/Bovino.